What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, I talk about the very controversial Redfall and my first few hours within the game. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode and my catch of the week. Gamers, when it comes to Redfall, this is a game that, honestly, I was not always excited for. From the initial announcement of the game, nothing about it really stood out to me. I thought maybe the premise sounded cool, you know, a town called Redfall, vampires. But in my personal opinion, the perception I got when it was first announced was it was more focused around being a co-op experience. And as I don't have any issue against co-op or multiplayer, I'm 100% a single-player gamer. I love single-player stories and adventures, and that's really where my preference lies. And over the years, I have played way too many single-player experiences that were really more intended or crafted to be a co-op or multiplayer experience, therefore suffering as a single-player for that. Now, that's why I was apprehensive initially with Redfall. Come last June of 22, Xbox had a showcase event, and it kicked it off with an extended look at Redfall, actually showcasing some gameplay and a certain mission or quest that you take on within the game. And immediately, I was drawn into it. Again, going from not having any interest at all to, okay, wait a minute. You have my attention, Arkane and Microsoft. I think I might be interested in this. So from that point on, anytime there is a gameplay hands-on or a new trailer announcing a certain aspect of gaming or whatever the case may be, I was listening. And every subsequent announcement or trailer or news piece, every single subsequent one, I was that much more excited to get my hands on this game and decided, you know what? Yep, I'm going to play this when it comes out. And went from no interest at all to I got to do this. And look, my experience with Arkane Studios, I've only ever played Prey, their version of a classic game on the 360 that I really wish they would have followed more closely to. But Prey, that came out back in 2016, I want to say, is when that game released. It was still a good game, but there was something about it that just didn't get me to the level that I wanted to get with it. And I think a lot of it really had to do with me wishing it was more about Tommy and that storyline and that style of game that the original Prey game was, more than anything else. But what I did love about it and love about Arkane and know that this is what they're known for is their storytelling, not just in general of the game that you're playing, the basic story getting pushed along as you progress, but the world storytelling. They drive their story through environmental storytelling. And that was absolutely the case in Prey. It's environments that you go through. And honestly, that's what I was excited about seeing in Redfall. Because the more you hear about this game and the fact that it's this sleepy little town set in, you know, the New England, Boston type area, and obviously it's made up for the game. But you look at it and you see the visuals of the game, right? And I know a lot of people have given it slack for that. But when I look at the visuals of Redfall and I hear what the premise is, vampires have taken over this sleepy New England town, you know, it sounds kind of okay. I feel like I've kind of seen this before, but I'm still interested. The one line that really got me hooked and said, yep, I can't wait to see what the story details are here and experience this firsthand myself, was actually an IGN hands-on preview where the person who did the preview said, yo, I was playing this and I felt like this is a Stephen King story, is the way it's been written, this town, the way that it is. So for me, I went to go play Redfall. It finally came out this past week, and it's on Game Pass. So I have Game Pass. I install it through the Xbox app, and I'm all excited to play. I sit down the night that it comes out, and I get to the character select screen. And before I can select my character, gamers, I passed out. So I did not get a chance to play it that night. I woke up 3 hours later, ended up just going to bed. But when I finally the next day did set aside some time to play it, I played for about 3 hours. So that 3 hours is what I want to share with you now, my experience with the game during that time. So when we get to the character select screen, that's the first thing you're going to do is choose which character you want to play as. And for any given reason, to be honest with you, whether it's you like the look of the character or the abilities that the character has, each character has unique abilities. Ultimately, I chose Jacob as my character to play as for both reasons, because I thought he looked cool. He had the hood and, you know, just that look he had going on really vibed with me. And then just the abilities that he had seemed like it would gel with the play style that I normally go for and most games that I play, which is a stealth-based approach. And the ability that he had that kind of sold me on him as a character, there's this spiritual raven that is with him. And when you use LB to use the ability and therefore the raven, you can either tap LB and the raven will go out into the immediate area or however far that you've upgraded that ability to at the point in time. And essentially do like a pulse radar and you can see the visible enemies for a certain amount of time that are in the area. If you hold down the RB button, anything that's right in your vicinity, he will scan that area and you'll be able to see those enemies. So there's different abilities that you can upgrade as time goes on to expand the radius or actually allow the raven to give and inflict damage on enemies. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. That's why I chose this character of Jacob, is liked his look, liked the ability, let's go. So when you first go into the game, the first thing I'll say is the graphics, right? Character models, and just in general, the world. So I know I've seen a lot of flack online, people complaining about the size of the hands of the characters and, you know, just, they don't look that good, the graphics. Well, let me just say this and preface by saying Arkane is known for a certain visual style, and they always do like a stylized look to the characters in their games. It was no different in Prey. If you look at what their track record is, they don't go for super realistic when it comes to their visuals in the games, at least as far as like the character models and things like that. They always go for something unique. And that's exactly what the developers said they were doing when it came to the hands. And somebody asked them, why are the hands so big? Well, we're just trying to go for a unique visual style. And not just in the design and the size of the hands or the way the character models look, they all look honestly kind of cartoonish. They have this kind of cartoonish look to them and not quite cel-shaded, but it's almost a painted look that they have to them. They're not, again, this ultra-realistic, high, massive polygon count character models. But I'm okay with it because for what this game is, if it makes sense, it just feels right. Again, there's some detail here, a decent amount of detail, but it's just the detail that is there is on that more of a cartoonish, cel-shaded-esque kind of look. So I don't have a problem with it. But that's what you're going to be expecting when you look at the character models. When we talk about the environments, let me just tell you that the environments in this game are absolutely gorgeous. The town of Redfall is your sandbox, and it is a pretty massive town. And you start out in the docks, and you're on this boat that has been basically marooned into the mud and dirt, because the docks, the vampires, have basically drained the docks of all the water. And the water is a wall that has been made and put up around the island town of Redfall so that nobody can leave or escape. So it's actually a really cool visual look when you first wake up as Jacob on the ship and you see this wall of water around you. It just kind of actually looks really cool. And the environments, the details in the environments are awesome. I love the environmental storytelling that I was talking about earlier that Arkane is known for, and they did not spare any expense when it comes to that in this game. Not just the boat that you start out on and missing person pictures and just all kinds of different things that just kind of add to Redfall feeling alive and feeling like a legitimate town. Because once you move past these drained docks, you go into essentially a firehouse, and that's your first safe house where you rescue a group of people that eventually they are now your group and they're helping you. You have the people that actually you can interact with and buy weapons from and trade different items that are resources that you find in the field for more upgrades and things like that, as well as a medical doctor that's set up there in the firehouse. You can buy first aid kits from him. There's all these different things that you can do. There's also a briefing room, has a map of Redfall and all the different areas there. Different heightened things have been going on and things in places of interest. So this is your first safe house. It's kind of given to you. But getting to the firehouse, you pretty much just come out of the docks, go up this drainage tunnel, and then boom, you're right there at the firehouse. Once you exit that firehouse, though, on the other side, whew, that is when you are given full leisure to explore Redfall to an extent, because there are some things that are barricaded off by this red mist that at this point in the game, I haven't found out what that exactly is yet. I just know, yeah, I can't go through that because it's going to immediately just pretty much drain my health and kill me. So can't go in that direction yet. There's a few areas that are like that, kind of roped off, if you will. But as I came out and I started to explore this town, I just absolutely loved the visual style of it, because the thing is, I think it's also perfect that Arkane chose to set this game during the months of fall. So you see the red and orange and yellow leaves either on the ground or in the trees as you're walking up and down the neighborhood streets. And there is a day-night cycle. And I know that sounds odd, because how is there a day side of the cycle when we're talking about vampires here? But they have a red sun that is active out there. They've kind of blocked out and done their own magic kind of thing to get the sun to be what it is, to where it's not going to harm them. The yellow sun is what harms them. So I don't know the details story-wise behind how that's possible yet, but I can't wait to find out. But as you go through in the world, I mean, there are so many different notes or that people have left behind, whether it's in journals or just different random communications with people, text message conversations and emails, flyers that are lying around. And they just really just add those layers of depth to the town of Redfall. And that is exactly what I was hoping for when I was reading these previews and watching the trailers, is, oh my God, I really hope this is what that game is. And I am not disappointed. It absolutely is. So the exploration aspect is amazing. You're just walking around. It's a first-person shooter perspective. And I mean, it's just, it controls well. I haven't had any issues with the controls. The analog sticks are very tight and good with movement, camera control, all that stuff is good. A is to jump, X is to reload, Y is to switch between your different weapons and your arsenal. Everything is very good as far as controls are concerned. I didn't have any issues with that. Gunplay is very solid, I would say. I wouldn't say it's excellent. I wouldn't say it's bad. I would say it's pretty good. It's solid. I haven't had any issues. I've alternated and used handguns and sniper rifles and shotguns so far. It's been very fun. But the most fun aspect of it when it comes to combat, though, for me, was when it comes to vampires, because obviously you got the regular cannon fodder human enemies that you're going to come across, and those just take as many, you know, as many shots as they take and they're dead. That's kind of boring, and you know, how long have we been doing that, right? Well, when it comes to the vampires, they take more than just shots to kill them. You sure deplete a health meter, and once it's emptied, that's not the end of them. You actually have one added step you got to do. You got to be close enough and have a weapon equipped with a stake in order to press the right, click in the right analog stick and stake them in the heart. And that is actually what does the finalization and kills them. And that moment and that action, it actually may not sound like a lot, but it's actually really cool and means a lot, because you feel pretty badass when you're running around and you got three vampires coming at you, and you're, at least for me, I'm blowing them away with my shotgun, and then it's like, bam, you know, stake this guy, turn around, bam, bam, shoot, shoot. Now he, stake him, the other guy. You know, it's just a really cool feeling when you're taking on a couple of vampires at once. And so the gunplay and the combat, I have enjoyed. I've also enjoyed, speaking of combat, the enemies that you fight. Obviously, the regular generic human enemy types, I'm not really, you know, nothing about them really gets me excited. But the vampires themselves, they're fun. But then there are these other enemy types. There's one called the Sin Eater that I came across that kind of teleports around, and you kind of have to listen out for the sound effects that it makes. And then, you know, you shoot it enough times and ultimately you get a cool echo scene that shows you a scene of something that happened in the area that you were fighting it in. And then there's another creature type that I came into contact with called a Shroud. And this was really weird. It was like a certain cone of vision. You could only see so far, but the more you walked and moved in the direction that you were going in, it opened up more line of sight for you. But the shroud itself was invisible. So I kept using and saw that I could use my Raven to expose where the shroud was. And then it's a cool death animation when you stake them. Either way, really cool enemy types that I've encountered so far outside of just the vampires. So I've thoroughly enjoyed that, discovering those new enemy types. And to take out these enemies, obviously, it requires weapons. And I've already talked about the types that I've used. But I got to tell you, my favorite weapon is the Grim Tide. And this weapon is awesome because it's a shotgun. It also comes pre-equipped with a stake on the end, kind of like a little bayonet. And then there is the design of it, the weapon skin itself. It just looks so amazing. It has this glow to it that's kind of a faint turquoise glow. And it has seashells and this very much nautical design to it. And of course, my show is called Lost at Sea Gaming, so I love anything nautically themed. It just, it looks awesome and is by far my favorite weapon so far in the game. One thing I also liked about it was it had a story attached to it. There was actually, when you go and examine it in the inventory system, there is a little kind of like a diary entry or journal entry almost that you can read, and it gives kind of a backstory to the weapon itself. Now, not every weapon has that, but this one did, and I just thought that was really awesome. Speaking of that inventory and just the menu system in general, I thought it's laid out really well. You can just press the menu button and you'll go bring up immediately the map. The map itself, I feel like it leaves a lot to be desired so far because there's not really much detail in it. But for what it is, I'm not hating on it too terribly bad. But man, there's just so many good maps end game in a lot of games, most games nowadays, that this one is just kind of under par so far for me. But outside of that, I mean, menu navigation, you access within the inventory system your loadout, and you can choose that. You can have up to 3 weapons at a time, and you can alternate which ones you want to have. You can also apply different weapon skins. You can apply stakes to certain weapons. There's different upgrades for different weapons. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can do with them and customize. The same thing with Jacob or whatever character you choose to play as you progress and do different things in the game and certain quests and objectives. You unlock new skin types and outfits for Jacob as well as for your weapons. So that was kind of fun playing around with those customization options as I unlocked those different things. And ultimately, there is the ability screen where you can obviously choose which abilities you want to upgrade. And there's so many different abilities based on obviously the different skill sets that your chosen character has. And there's an XP system. So as you are taking out vampires and enemies and doing different objectives and progressing the game, you do earn XP and level up. And as you level up, you get skill points and you use those skill points in order to upgrade your abilities. So all kinds of great stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And ultimately, after I exited this firehouse to kind of get back in line with where I was doing and what exactly I did do in the game, there's these 2 helicopters that are attacked by lightning strikes out of this crazy reddish lightning storm that the vampires have created. And when they crash, I basically am tasked with going to the 2 crash sites because my ultimate objective was, all right, we have a safe house here at the firehouse, but we need supplies. So there was this gun and sports hunting shop that was in town that we know of that had a lot of gear we could get. So how about you go out there and see what you can find there? And then that's when along the way, I see those 2 helicopters crash. So it's like, all right, well, hey, let's go check out the crash sites. Maybe there's survivors, help them out. Plus also maybe there's some supplies. So that's ultimately what I'm on my way to do. But I couldn't help but stop so many times along the way because there was just so much to see and do as I passed it. All kinds of different little restaurants and bars. And there was even this clinic that was amazing. That's where I found my first Sin Eater. And there was just so much context to the story here. And the story and premise seems to be this, gamers. Essentially, there is something about this woman that was special with her blood that people who worked in Redfall, these scientists, brought her in. And she was told initially that she was going to be basically, her blood was going to be used as like a cure to help heal people. Well, come to find out, ultimately in the opening cutscene, you find out that that is not what happened. They abused her and they were doing genetic experimentation. And from that, it seems, is where we got the vampires. So more context there to be discovered for sure. But as I'm exploring this Avium Clinic, as it's called, I just discover all these different notes and communications and all these different things written on whiteboards. All kinds of just very great information into the backstory of what was going on in Redfall just before it was overtaken or started to get overtaken by the vampire horde. And what I've loved about it is the fact that I feel like there is so much more to unravel here. And it's very interesting to me because it seems like the genetic experimentation that they were doing, it was the end goal to find a way to de-age people and use the genetic modification to erase wrinkles and age and kind of de-age the body in a way. I'm very much interested in finding out what exactly all the details are as I continue to go on. And some of the echoes that you can find, there are these collectibles called echoes that are from the woman who was supplying that blood at the beginning. And those are interesting kind of monologues from her from the past and about her feelings as things were going on. So I definitely have thoroughly enjoyed my time in the game. I would say that if you had any concerns whatsoever about this not being a good game, that I have not experienced that. I will tell you the hiccups that I have experienced within the game, though. Frame rate was a big and is a big talking point about the game. You know, it was announced before the game released that it was going to release at 30 frames per second, not 60 frames per second. That will come later. And I will say, unfortunately, I have experienced a couple of times a dippage in frame rate when there was some frantic combat going on and I'm spinning the camera around. There is a little bit of stuttering, some frame rate dippage, but it's only happened a couple times, but it still happened. So I did want to make note of that for you guys, as well as some pop-in. And that's the worst experience that I've had so far in the game is the pop-in. And essentially those whiteboards I was talking about earlier, for instance, here's an example. I'll walk up to a whiteboard and all the writing and drawings on the whiteboard are just a blur. They're fuzzy. And if I just stand there and stare at the whiteboard, a few seconds will have to go by and then boom, everything pops into place with perfect clarity. So that's like that in multiple locations, not just on, you know, whiteboards and whatnot. There's multiple times I've encountered this throughout my entire 3 hours that I played. So there is an issue there with the pop-in. Again, very minor, a little bit here or there, stuttering with the frame rate. So that's the only real issues I've had with the game. Otherwise, I have loved what I've played of it. I love the world, the town of Redfall. I could not get enough of absorbing the information and the backstory and what was going on in this town. And just the setting itself is really cool. That New England setting, something about it. I don't know if it's because it's more of like a sea driven town with the harbor and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, but just something about it. It really, really speaks to me. So again, if you had any concerns about a single player aspect of the game versus the multiplayer or the co-op aspect, if you're like me and you prefer single player, I'm here to tell you, single player is 100% A-OK because there is no indication on my part and what I've played so far that makes me feel like, oh man, I'm playing single player, but in a co-op game, not at all, gamers. So, especially if you have Game Pass and you're questionable on whether you want to buy it and pay for it or not, definitely install it, give it a shot. I think you might be surprised. But that wasn't all I played this past week. I continued to make some progress in Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Gamers, this past week I shared in my last Captain's Quarters with you my first 11 hours of experience in Jedi Survivor. And since then, unfortunately, I've only had 4 hours of playtime to advance in the game. But I got to tell you, what an awesome 4 hours that it was. So if you listen to my last week's episode, you'll know that I'm on the planet of Kobo. And this planet is just absolutely amazing. It was my highlight of the week last week, exploring this planet and just all the different, from world design to character design to different activities that you can do in this planet. I mean, it was an awesome experience. And it still is an awesome experience. And I am very... I won't say surprised at this point to say, but I am quite interested to say that that 4 hours that I played this past week is yet again a continuation of what I was doing on Kobo, and I'm still on Kobo. So out of 15 hours of total playtime in that game, probably roughly 12 of those hours have just been exploring Kobo, and I am still only 33% of the way complete as far as the whole entirety of percentage completion exploration of Kobo, according to what the in-game map shows me. So that tells you just how much there is to do and see in this planet. And specifics of what I had done this past week. So I was at a point where last I had played where I said, you know what? I'm starting to see there's this map, the map of the planet. It just continues to keep going and keep going. And every time I go into a new area, I see there are pathways for multiple other new areas that I can open up as I go into them. And I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? I am pretty confident that probably this story or side quests at some point will end up taking me to these areas. So instead of treading over the same ground twice, let me just go ahead and focus on the story right now and see where it takes me. And if it gets to a point where I either leave Kobo or I explore the rest of what's there, then okay, I'll know that at least at that point in time, there's nothing else made story-wise that's going to take me there, so I'll go ahead and explore those areas. So I pick up my play session this past week, and I started where I was last left off, which was the main mission objective of basically reactivate the forest array. And I know if you haven't played the game, you're not going to know what I'm talking about. I don't want to go into the details of that for spoilers. So let me just say I'm going into this forested area of Kobo. And if you'll remember, my description of the planet last week was basically saying it's a very kind of a western desert, Nevada canyon type, South Dakota. It has that kind of a vibe to it. It's not completely desert, but it has those canyons and chasms, but there's also those beautiful turquoise rivers and ponds and different areas and trees and grass and green in various locations. So it's not completely desert. And that is even more accentuated when you go to the forest to start going through it and get to the forest array. And I got to tell you, the forested areas were just as amazing to explore as was the opening portions of the planet. So as I go through, I mean, obviously it's your typical, hey, I see enemies, I'm taking out some enemies, some stormtroopers, some battle droids, some other fauna that lives on the planet. And I'm doing platforming, the wall running and jumping and figuring out different puzzles along the way. And again, I don't really want to go into too many specifics because I don't want to get accidentally spoilers put out there. But let's just say that as I'm going through, I came across another High Republic chamber. And there is a High Republic chamber in the last portion of the main story aspect of the game that you have to go through, and you meet a droid named Z, is her name for short, and she's awesome. I loved Z, and she is from the High Republic era, and again, won't go into the details of what all that shapes out to be and how she's there and why and all that, but let's just say that that chamber is kind of a precursor or a tutorial for High Republic chambers to come that you'll find on your journey. And I found the next one, and they're really cool. They're basically puzzle rooms. So you go through and you have these different orbs that are essentially activators to these bridges, these energy bridges that will appear once you put the orb in a certain orb holder, is what I'll call it. And there's only certain spots you can put them in. So you have to basically go through elevations and different cross chasms and utilize the limited number of orbs in the right order in order to progress throughout these areas. And you'll get special items and different things like that and memory flashbacks. Cool stuff. And it's just kind of fun for at least me anyways. So I enjoyed the next High Republic chamber. Had some cool stuff going on there. I met a Wogue, which was basically the desert version of a Wampa. And it was a very interesting fight. He took me out the first time, but the second time I actually chopped one of his arms off, and the bestiary description afterwards when I read it, it said, yeah, you know, you can actually chop their limbs off, but then they'll get even more aggressive and more speedy with their attacks. And I'm just like, oh man, yeah, I just lived that actually. So regardless, very interesting fight. Cool animations when you do the takedown and finisher, if you will, to complete the fight. But you finally get to this area where you go into a rehabilitation clinic. And this was also a really cool area, just the exterior of it and the interior. And I'll just say that my play session culminated in some amazing story segments. And that will lead me into my highlight of the week. Gamers, in the interest of spoilers, yet again, I will not go into a massive amount of detail here, but I will just talk about, in general, my love of everything that went down as far as the story is concerned at this rehabilitation clinic. So there's been a lot of stuff that's been coming from the High Republic in this game so far, and I have loved that because I said it before, it's a very untapped era in Star Wars lore outside of just books and comics. So for them to be really going into that era as far as like kind of fleshing it out and adding some backstory, putting some cool characters in there, I am loving it. And I'll just say that you really find out who the main antagonist is probably going to be in the game once you experience what this rehabilitation clinic has in store for you. And there's just a lot going on there. There's a lot of detail and context to it. And there's a lot of also mystery that's still left after some sequences that happen at this clinic. And I just cannot wait to find out what those secrets and details and mysteries are, the answers to them. I can't wait to experience it and to find out what is going to happen further as the game continues to progress. It was just an amazingly written story, and it just absolutely got me gripped by the throat right now with the characters and the backstories and the lore and what is going on. And this is just the first planet, gamers. And that's what I'm just saying over and over. This is just the first major new planet that you go to in this game. And 15 hours in, I just can't even imagine. Like, this could be a game all by itself, you know, back in the day. I can't imagine what else Respawn, the developer, has in store for us as the gamers going forward. This has just been an awesome, awesome experience so far. So that was my highlight of the week, these story moments and the lore and the context that is starting to show itself within the game in Jedi Survivor. Now let's go open up a chest of buried treasure gaming tips that I have for you in Jedi Survivor. Gamers, this past week in playing Jedi Survivor, there was one section that I got to that I spent way too much time trying to get past this section, a lot more than what I should have, because it took me a minute to realize what exactly was happening and how to get past this section. So the section in question, obviously it takes place on Kobo, the planet that I'm on right now. So when you get to Kobo and you get to a certain point in the exploration of that planet, you're going to come across a Force Tear. Now, this Force Tear is something new to Jedi Survivor, and I had seen the previews of this type of gameplay element before the game came out, and it's the first time you approach it, or at least I approached it or found it in the game. And you're going to go and interact with the bluish, whitish lights and be transported to this location. And in this location, it's going to be a platforming segment with a timer running at the top left, and you're going to have platforms. Some of them are collapsible, some of them are not, and you're going to have to jump across these platforms because they're out in the abyss, basically, so you can't miss a jump, you fall, you fail, and have to restart. So as you're going across, there's also these energy fields that are coming at you, and you see them alternating between essentially a whitish, clearish energy field is half of it, and the other half of it is red. So obviously, stay away from the red energy field. Well, the problem is they alternate between which side of your path they are on. So the half that is the free to run through, the clearish, whitish half, you can go through that, and the other half is red. Don't go through that. But as you go towards it and get close, it's constantly alternating between the left or right side, which one is on which side. And you have to, at least I thought, time your jumps with some kind of pattern of this moving towards you energy field. Well, that is not the case, gamers. You do have to time your jumps, but the way that it works is the energy fields only alternate when you jump. So every time you press that jump button on PlayStation, it is the X button. So every time you're pressing X, that force field or energy field is alternating which side the different colored energy fields are on. So you have to kind of gauge it, and it's constantly moving forward towards you. So you do have to time your jumps, and you do have to use the use of the jump button, which was very new and different to me. I thought that was unique. I don't remember playing a game that you are the dictator as to when the coming towards you energy field or whatever it may be is alternating. Typically 99% of the time, it has some kind of its own built-in pattern. That is not the case in this. So if you do not want to be like me and spend probably a solid 10 to 15 minutes until you figured out, wait a minute, this is not on some kind of pattern. This only changes when I jump. So jumps, double jumps, it all matters. There's a couple of sliding sections in there. So I think that as long as you know that from the outset, your jumps dictate when these things alternate, you'll be much better off than I was. So that's this week's buried treasure. Now let's go see what this week's Captain's Decree is. Gamers, when we talk about a game having a broken launch, when a game launches broken, is that such a thing? When is a game really considered truly broken, at least in my opinion? Well, I first look at the fact that I will say I don't believe that we will ever get, there's no such thing as a perfect game. Let me just say that. So I don't think that any game that releases ever, no matter how perfect it may seem at launch, every game that ever releases will always have some kind of bug or issue. That's why no matter what the game is, there's always patches released for pretty much every game that releases. Now, obviously, some games release with more bugs than others and worse bugs than others. I go back and I look at a few games in the past, some going further back than others. I go back to Assassin's Creed Unity first. And that game launched, and I mean, the internet went nuts with all kinds of memes and screenshots of and horror stories of people that experienced cutscenes where the characters in the cutscenes had no faces. And look, I even experienced a bug myself of falling through an invisible floor that was just like a bottomless fall for Arno, the main character in the game. And that was the only bug I experienced. I never had the faceless character models or anything like that, so thankfully my experience was a very solid one. I loved Unity, never had those issues. A lot of people did. Then you go to something like Cyberpunk 2077. I would say it was the before Redfall, which is why I'm discussing this topic. Before Redfall, Cyberpunk 2077 was the biggest, most well-known, massive launch that was really, really bad. Now, I will give, you know, the clarification that it was the PS4 and Xbox One versions of the game that were just garbage from what I've seen and from what I've been told and read, just unplayable pretty much on those consoles. But there was also a lot of issues that people had over all the different PS5 and Series X consoles that are sold out there, and even the Series S. But my point is yet again, maybe I'm just lucky and I don't want to jinx myself here, but I did not have any issues. Now, my wife did. My wife had many bugs and glitches that she experienced throughout her time playing the game. I dropped 60 hours into that game and did not experience any of the issues that she had, nor any of the major issues, the game crashing bugs that other people were talking about online. So Cyberpunk 2077, yes, I will say that game launched and it appeared to not be ready for launch. And obviously CD Projekt Red almost lost complete credibility because of the way they launched that game. But they put in the work and they got it fixed and they now have a next-gen upgraded version. And it's the most played game or viewed game at the time it was, at one time it was, on Steam. So, I mean, this game just completely had redemption, and that was awesome because I love Cyberpunk 2077. Would love to get back to it someday. But then we come to the most current bad launch, quote unquote, and that will be Redfall. And you know, I know a lot of people online are ripping this game apart, and I've discussed earlier in the episode that I personally have not really experienced any game-breaking issues. I will say, yes, as I stated earlier, there has been some frame rate dippage and more intense and chaotic firefights. And obviously there is some issues also with the pop-in that I described that was just prevalent throughout the game. Like everywhere I was at, it was there. So that was an issue. And one thing I did not mention earlier that I will mention here is the enemy AI. I will agree with what I've seen online. It's pretty dumb. So I do think there's some issues there with Redfall, and I do believe that it could have used some more time in the oven before it was released. But why? Why was it pushed out when it really wasn't ready? And do I think it's a broken game? I don't think so. I thoroughly enjoyed my 4 hours, as I discussed earlier. The other two games I mentioned that were supposedly broken at launch, I thoroughly enjoyed both of those games for an exponentially decent amount of hours. So, unfortunately, some people, a lot of people, in the whole grand scheme of things, will get some bad versions of games. But when is a game truly broken? That, I would say, would be at a point where it's completely unplayable. You can't play the game like it was for Cyberpunk 2077 on PS4 and Xbox One. That, in my opinion, is what a broken game launching is. But I don't consider Redfall to be a broken game. Are there some issues they can fix? Yes, and they will be fixing them. The frame rate, the stuttering that I've experienced, that'll be fixed with their 60 frames per second patch, as well as, I assume, through the process of that, the pop-in for certain specific graphics and the environments. Now, as far as the AI, I don't know. I don't know how that missed the the play testing. I don't understand how that was missed in that and some of these other issues. But I feel like, honestly, Redfall is a victim of expectation. Arcane Studios is known for amazingness, and this is their first, I mean, honestly, ball drop. The first time they've dropped the ball as far as a game release, because Deathloop was critically acclaimed and got tens a lot of places. It was a fantastic game. Dishonored series, Prey. I mean, they've all reviewed well, and just Arcane is known for great games. And so to release this is like, oh, wow, this is kind of unheard of for Arcane. Why is it though? Like, what was it? Was it Microsoft pushing them to release it by this window? Was, their own internal, what, we're just going to accept this and we'll get by with it? I don't know what was going on there internally. I can't speculate to that, but all I will say is, again, give Redfall a chance. I think that you might end up liking it. And just because the internet says that a game is broken doesn't mean that you will have the same experience. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming and on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.